Thank the Lord for the song. Appreciate the Lord's goodness to us. Thank you, Trevden. I wanted to share not long ago, I believe I related to you. I was at home and I remember I was in my study and I had a wish. I just thought, well, I wished I had a good book to read. Most all of my books were in boxes, packed up. And lo and behold, not long after that, Sister Lisa brought me a book here to church for me to read. And I've gotten a lot of good out of that book. It was called The Night to Remember. A Night to Remember. You know, it was a long time ago, 1912, in April, kind of far removed from us. But according, this book was written from the hearings, from the information and the testimonies that came out of all the hearings that were done after the sinking of the Titanic. Great Britain, they had hearings. They had hearings in the U.S. Congress here of testimonies and things that happened. And that's, this book is taken from those testimonies and information that happened. I wanted to share just a few. Somehow the Titanic, the word Titanic means having great force, the name. Having great force, magnitude, or power. Colossal. That's what the name means. Somehow it was deemed unsinkable. They built the ship with watertight compartments inside the bottom of the ship that if the outer skin was broken, that it would keep the ship afloat. And there were several articles that appeared in magazines and things, and they called it the unsinkable ship. And from the book, one of the testimonies, when they were loading the cargo, one of the men that was loading that made the statement that said God himself couldn't sink this ship. Which, wished he wouldn't have said that. Anyway, I wanted to give just a few of the details of that book. It was April the 14th, the night that it hit. It was a clear night. The stars were shining. But it was a cold night. The water temperature was 28 degrees. And the air temperature was like around 34, 35. It was very, very cool. When they hit the iceberg, 11:40 p.m., just before midnight, they had people watching for icebergs. They had spotters that were looking for icebergs. They actually saw the iceberg before they hit it. And they turned. They made a turn. But you don't turn an 800-foot ship on a dime. And it struck the right side. I guess it's called the starboard side. Anyway, it stuck the right side. People that were who had cabins that were fairly in close proximity said that they could hear the metal ripping and the crash, but a lot of the majority of the people said they just felt like the boat quivered when they hit it. It just kind of had a quiver to it, and they didn't have a clue of how bad it was. There was a large part of the iceberg that dropped off onto the ship, onto the Titanic, and they had people milling around looking at that and viewing that and playing with the ice. That was at 11:40 p.m. It took them 25 minutes to figure out how bad the damage really was. And at 12:05, they ordered the first lifeboats to be lowered. At 12:15, the first wireless call for help was made. At 12:45, they had rockets that they fired, which were help, calls for help, signals. And at 12:45, the first boat was lowered. So it's just a little over an hour before the first boat lowered. One of the problems was they're close to 350, the closest land is about 350 miles away, Newfoundland. And people are not wanting to get off this secure ship, warm, seemingly secure, to get off in these little lifeboats that could hold 40 people at a time. The original intent was that these lifeboats was to transport people back and forth to other ships. There was not near enough lifeboats to carry everybody safely. At 1:40, the last rocket fired. At 2:05, the last boat, it was a collapsible. They had these 14 boats were regular wooden lifeboats, but there was about four of them that were called collapsibles. They were frames with these material that was wrapped around the material, and they had a big struggle getting those things to work and struggling, but they had a hard time getting the people into the lifeboats. They didn't want to go. The first lifeboat left with 18 people instead of 40. The captain had ordered women and children on the lifeboats, no men. There was a young boy, he was either 11 or 13 years old. There was great controversy whether he was to get on or not. They didn't hardly want to let him on. And they had gun power. There was shots fired to keep order. Nobody was shot, but they did fire some shots to keep order. Some of the men would jump overboard if they saw a boat wasn't full. They'd jump overboard and swim out to the boat. But most of the men were there to help the women and children on the boats. Tough situation. It was a night of hard choices and hard decisions. Women didn't want to leave their husbands. Wives didn't want to leave their husbands. Some of the men tricked their wives, got them onto the boat. Other men forced their wives onto the boat. And some wives just chose to stay with their husbands. been a hard place. Been a very, very difficult place. The Titanic was one of the most... It was built for luxury. It was the finest ship up to that time. It was really nice. They had everything. Accommodations there were nice. At 2:10, the last wireless signal was sent out. They were sending out distress calls that we need help. At 2:18, the lights of the ship failed. They all went out. And at 2:20, the ship sank. So that which was called unsinkable, it took 2 hours and 40 minutes for it to sink. There was another ship, the USS California, which was, and I didn't know this until I read the book, it was 10 miles away from the Titanic. They saw the rockets and they wondered why they were shooting their rockets. Their wireless telegraph operator went to bed at 11:30. There's supposed to be two telegraph operators, and that it was always supposed to be manned. But they didn't know, they only had one, and he went to bed at 11:30, and the Titanic struck the iceberg at 11:40. But they didn't go get him out of bed and find out what was going on. They just... The U.S. Congress deemed the inaction of the USS California reprehensible. They could have probably saved everybody that was on board the Titanic being 10 miles away. There was another ship called the Carpathia. It was way south of the Titanic. But when it got the call, he headed towards... They got the coordinates of where the Titanic was from the wireless telegraph, and they headed immediately in that direction. The captain ordered all the doctors that were on board on deck. They changed the larger rooms that they had. They changed them into hospital rooms. They supplied blankets, bedding, hot food, hot drinks. They were doing everything they could as they headed that way. There was a book written by a man named Morgan Robertson, and he was also a seaman. In 1898, and it was called... The title of the book was first called Futility when it came out. And the story of this book was about an 800-foot long ship, approximately. The name of the ship in his book was called the Titan. And in his book, the Titan hits an iceberg in April. And also, there's not enough lifeboats on the ship to save everybody. This was written approximately 12 years or 14 years before the Titanic. The Titanic also had received 5 warnings that evening. Another source of information said they received 7. Maybe 2 came the day before, I don't know. But there was 5 warnings that evening they received that there was icebergs in the area. I don't know the mentality behind the captain of the Titanic. It was his last voyage. He was to retire after that. I don't know if they thought, what are the odds of hitting an iceberg out here in the Pacific Ocean? It's a big ocean. I don't know what was going through their mind. I don't know if it was the air of the luxury and the thought of this ship was unsinkable. But regardless, the 5 warnings were ignored. They had spotters watching for icebergs. They could have changed course. They could have made a mid-course adjustment. Let's go a little further south. Let's get out of the iceberg area. They could have slowed down. That was why the California that was 10 miles away, it had completely stopped because of icebergs. That's why they stopped. They were going to wait till morning before they picked up travel again. Or they could have just slowed down. They were going barely under full speed. They had options, they had choices, but somehow they didn't connect. And the tragedy that came, it shook the world. The book said, and there was all kinds of stories that went out, but the book said New York City was in a frenzy. It shook the world. There were people from all over. It left Southampton. It was heading towards New York City. And it made a lot of changes. It made a lot of changes to the naval. There was a lot of things that came out of this wreck that changed traveling by ship after this. Was it a judgment of God? I don't know. I don't really know what to think of it. I just know the tragedy of it all. And to think it was unnecessary. That it was totally unnecessary. If they would have only just slowed down, they could have avoided the great tragedy that happened. The lifeboats, once they were lowered in the water, they were getting away from the ship for fear that the ship would pull them down. The captain at the end, when the last lifeboat was off, he freed his men. He thanked them for doing their duty. And he said, I release you. He said, every man, you're free. Every man is for himself. At that time, a lot of his crew members jumped overboard of the ship. And that was right before it went down. survival was very, very slim with waters at 28 degree temperature. There were a few men that was able to swim to a boat, and people helped them. A lot of the boats, another hard question, here's people crying and calling out for help. What do we do? They were afraid of going back in, that they would be overrun and that it would sink their boat. I know there was a first officer, Lowe. He was very helpful. He was able to take a... They were putting three or four seamen in each of the boats to help the women. But First Officer Lowe took a rope. He was able to hold several boats together. I don't know, it was four or five boats. He was able to hold them together. He got all of his passengers out into the other boats, and he went in and he was able to save a few. But many of them that they pulled out, they didn't survive. It was too cold. I want to look at a verse in Proverbs, the first chapter and the 20th verse. In verse 20 of Proverbs 1, it says, "Wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates, in the city she uttereth her word, saying, How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity, and the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge? Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. Because I have called and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. But ye have said it not all my counsel and would none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me, for that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord." You know, these verses here, he talks about a scorner. And it's pride that's behind a scorner. Somebody that's mocking, somebody that's scorning. There's pride involved in that. And these verses, to me, is wisdom personified. It's not, God doesn't laugh when people's calamity comes. But it's like the laws that we mocked at, or the law that we overrode, or the warnings that we overrode, get the last laugh. Not that they laugh, but they get the last say. God doesn't laugh. One place it talks about he doesn't like the death of the wicked, one verse says. He's not laughing when people are in misery and they're in trouble and hurting. But there's laws of sowing and reaping, consequences that come in our lives when we fail to heed the warnings that we get in life. Have you ever looked back and said, I wish I would have listened a little bit closer? I wish I would have paid a little bit more attention to what was being said to me. You know, pride is... pride is a dangerous... it's a dangerous thing. It's something that you cannot see. We can't see our own pride by ourselves. Other people might see it, but it seems like we just... our own pride, we can't see it for what it is until something comes along. And hits our boat. Troubles our boat. Our ship. Then we begin to dig. We begin to question. We begin to listen. Jesus talked about pride being like leaven. He likened it unto leaven. It works quietly. It has a tendency to puff up, to elevate. There's a verse that talks about the pride of thy heart hath deceived thee. It keeps us from being able to receive. The things that God has for us. And whatever avenue or whatever source the Lord designs to bring to us. Pride keeps us from being able to really receive what God has for us. There's another verse I wanted to get. Proverbs the 16th chapter. It says in the 18th verse, pride, verse 17, the highway of the upright is to depart from evil. He that keepeth his way preserveth his soul. Pride goeth before destruction, and an haughty spirit before a fall. Better it is to be of an humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Pride is something that's very... and there's all different types of pride. There's there can be a national pride. And I want this to be balanced. I love my country. I love the freedoms that we have. I enjoy the freedoms that we have. I enjoy the forefathers that had the fear of God. I appreciate. But there's a lot of people that take pride that we are what we are because of who we are. And I believe that's wrong. I believe it's been the mercy of God that we have what we have. I appreciate my country, and I want to honor it by living a godly life. But there is a pride that's rooted in self, one's own ability. There's religious pride, and I feel like that's why the Pharisees couldn't really recognize the Lord. There's a verse in the book of, see if I can find it, I think it's Luke. Well, I'm not seeing it. It's where John the Baptist was preaching, and he said, "Say not within yourselves, we have Abraham to our father." I don't think they'd said anything up to that point. But the Holy Spirit was speaking to them. Don't say within yourself that we have Abraham to our father.
Luke 3 and 8,
thank you. In verse 8 he says, "Bring forth therefore fruits worthy of repentance, and begin not to say within yourselves, we have Abraham to our father. For I say unto you that God is able of these stones to raise up children unto Abraham." So what he's saying is, don't trust in that thought. We're Abraham's lineage. Don't trust in that. That's no big deal. God is able to raise up seed unto Abraham from these stones. And that's exactly what they did. Another time, and when they confronted Jesus, they said, "We be Abraham's seed. We be Abraham's seed." That was pride. That was their pride. And it kept them from seeing the Lord, and it kept them from seeing and receiving what God wanted to give them and wanted them to have. I want to read also in the book of Luke, the first chapter. This is part of what Mary has said in verse 47, Luke 1 and 47. It said, "And my spirit hath rejoiced in God my Savior, for he hath regarded the low estate of his handmaid. For behold, from henceforth all generations shall call me blessed, for he that is mighty hath done to me great things, and holy is his name. And his mercy is on them that fear him from generation to generation. He has showed strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts. He hath put down the mighty from their seats, and exalted them of low degree. He hath filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he has sent empty away." I marvel at that. That there were people that Jesus could not help, even though he was the Son of God, he couldn't help them because of their pride. They weren't able to receive what he had because their pride was standing in the way. And that's what I believe it's talking about the rich. I don't believe that's just the financially rich, but it's those that were rich in themselves that didn't think they had a need, that thought they were okay. He filled the hungry. I'm thankful today that when we come to God with a hungry heart and we recognize that we have a need, that He is able to meet and fill that need. We don't have to go away empty-handed. But pride stood in their way of being able to receive. And they were facing destruction. They were facing the destruction of Jerusalem. They were facing the downfall of the nation. And Jesus wept over the city at one point. He said, "How often would I have gathered you, but you knew not the time, you would not, and you didn't know the time of your visitation." Pride, it was pride that kept people from seeing what God had for them and what the Lord wanted to give them. Lord, help us today. He mentioned to the disciples, he said, "Beware of the leaven of the Sadducees and the Pharisees." And the disciples thought he was talking about bread, that they had brought no bread. And that's not what he was talking about. He was talking about beware of their teaching. Teaching that puffs up. Teaching that exalts the group. Teaching that exalts man. And I don't know, I want to study that more and look into that more. But there were teachings there that were exalting, that were feeding their pride. And they weren't able to get a hold of what God had for them. I want to close with a poem. Why should the spirit of mortal be proud? Oh, why should the spirit of mortal be proud? Like a swift, fleeting meteor, a fast-flying cloud, a flash of the lightning, a break of the wave, man passeth from life to his rest in the grave. The leaves of the oak and the willow shall fade, be scattered around and together be laid. And the young and the old and the low and the high shall molder to dust and together shall lie. The infant a mother attended and loved, the mother that infant's affection who proved, the husband that mother and infant who blessed, each all are away to their dwellings of rest. The maid on whose cheek, on whose brow, on whose eye shone beauty and pleasure, her triumphs are by. And the memory of those who loved her and praised are alike from the minds of the living erased. The hand of the king that the scepter hath borne, the brow of the priest that the mitre hath worn, the eye of the sage and the heart of the brave are hidden and lost in the depth of the grave. The peasant whose lot was to sow and to reap, the herdsman who climbed with his goats up the steep, the beggar who wandered in search of his bread, have faded away like the grass that we tread. The saint who enjoyed the communion of heaven, the sinner who dared to remain unforgiven, The wise and the foolish, the guilty and just, have quietly mingled their bones in the dust. So the multitude goes, like the flower or the weed, that withers away to let others succeed. So the multitude comes, even those we behold, to repeat every tale that has often been told. For we are the same our fathers have been. We see the same sights our fathers have seen. We drink the same stream and view the same sun and run the same course our fathers have run. The thoughts we are thinking our fathers would think. From the death we are shrinking, our fathers would shrink. To the life we are clinging to, they also would cling. But it speeds for us all like a bird on the wing. They loved, but the story we cannot unfold. They scorned, but the heart of the haughty is cold. They grieved, but no well from their slumbers will come. They joyed, but the tongue of their gladness is dumb. They died, and we things that are now, who walk on the turf that lies over their brow, who make in their dwelling a transient abode, meet the things that they met on their pilgrimage road. Yea, hope and despondency, pleasure and pain, are mingled together in sunshine and rain. And the smiles and the tears, the song and the dirge still follow each other like surge upon surge. 'Tis the wink of an eye, 'tis the draught of a breath, from the blossom of health to the paleness of death, from the gilded saloon to the buyer in the shroud. Oh, why should the spirit of mortal be proud? That poem has always touched me. One generation comes after another. We run the same course. We see the same sun. We see everything. We see most of what they saw. And it just seems like it's a big cycle. You know, it'd be good if one generation could pick up on all the mistakes and failures of the previous generation. But that little word pride gets in there. And it keeps us from being able to hear the older generation like we should. I'm sorry, I didn't finish the story. The Carpathia made it to the site. There is no Titanic. They began to spot these little lifeboats and pick them up. The Carpathia that day changed his destination. He took them to New York City, where they were going to. They got their... The Carpathia sent off rockets too, and the lifeboats, spotted them about 3:30. That was about an hour after the Titanic sank. But there were some grateful passengers that they were able to get on the lifeboats. You know, this morning as I was thinking about this little thought, what does the lifeboat represent to us? To me, it represents our personal experience of salvation. That's the only thing that's going to take us through, is our personal contact, our personal hold with God. And I'm thankful that that can take us through. I wish we could learn from history. I wish we could learn A Night to Remember. It's quite a title. Wish we didn't have to make the same mistake. You know, in a sense, I feel like pride has... I feel like our nation is kind of lifted up in a way. It seems like when people get lifted up in their minds, they fail to recognize their need. Their need of the Lord. And in our country, our nation as a whole, people are failing to recognize we need the Lord's help in a bad way. Everything is not as safe and secure as it looks. We need God. We need the Lord. Appreciate your attention this morning. Pray for me.